want to go.
Good ball for DeVille. First time shot. And Montreal has taken the lead. Once again, the Impact skipped the midfield. The Revs switched off. Can't do that, as you said at the top of the show, Paul, with Marco DeVille is out on the pitch. Win again. Turns to face. Plays the feet of Rowe. Top of the D. Good combination. Kelleher. 1-1. The Revs answer right back. DeVille making the run. Oh, he lets it run. Takes a shot. And gets a second goal of the game. That is a clinical finish by a terrific striker. And again, the Revs victimized by a long angle ball to Marco DeVille, who puts the finishing touch and gives...
Yeah, you know, there's no pressure to the ball, and that's got to be better. And then obviously, DeVille's class, you got to respect that ability. So being between, you know, the goal and the ball is a lot better spot.
They've only lost one out of their last nine, and right now it's just not going the Revs' way. But there is time to recover, nearly a quarter of the game to go as Caldwell wins it. Trying to take matters into his own hands here. Plays win. Tries to chip the keeper. Oh, my word! We win! We'll make highlight reels around the world!
He will make highlight reels around the world. Revs fans don't care that he makes highlight reels around the world right now. Revs fans care about the fact that Lee Wynn, with the goal the other night to equalize versus Montreal, gets the Revs into the playoffs. First time since 2008-2009, the Revs appear in back-to-back playoff appearances. It is now a time to look forward to November. The push is on. Welcome to the podcast. How we doing, people? It is Tuesday, October 14th, 2014. Good morning. I am Tom Quinlan. Will Blasini and Brian Speaks are both off today, so it's solo dolo for Tom Q. It's been a while since it's just been me and you doing a podcast, huh? Usually I got people coming on here. I got guests. Light day. But we still got the banging outside. They're still doing these stupid construction. Nothing we can do about it, though. But you go back to Saturday afternoon, a late afternoon in Montreal, and with this team trailing at halftime, again, you thought that they were going to lose. They haven't won a game. They haven't pulled points this year in which they were trailing at halftime. Finally, that curse is dispelled. Now 0-11-1 on the year when the team is trailing at halftime. So we're getting marginally better, right? So I thought the way that first half ended the other night was ugly. That was a terrible game, to be honest, guys. I mean, there was nothing that really showed me that this is a better road team. There's nothing that really showed me that the Revs are reliable in pressure situations on the road yet. They are a much better team. They're a much improved team. They were clutch when they needed to be clutch. The Lee Wynn goal proved that, but I still just don't feel good about this team playing road games. I emphasize it a lot on this show. Second place needs to be the bare minimum for this team. The bare minimum. I don't want to see them finish in third because I just don't think you're going to... I think you're better off having as many home games as possible here. And to be honest, DC United, you know, who knows how far they're going to go into the playoffs. Sure that they're a great built team by Ben Olsen, but are they just, you know, lightning in a bottle right now? Who knows what we could see from Olsen's squad? I mean, that was, you talk about terrible first halves. DC United in Houston was almost as bad as Revs versus Montreal. And there's nothing in DC right now that scares me and says, well, they're a team that's going to overwhelm New England in the playoffs. No. The Revs haven't finished higher than third since 2007, okay? And we all know what happened in 2007 when they lost in the MLS Cup Finals 2-1 to Houston. But historically, the Revs, as a three seed, have never done well. And let's just go back to recent history to show you. They're up. They're tied at, 2008-2009, yeah, they lose to Chicago in back-to-back playoffs, Eastern Conference semifinals. They were tied on nil going back to Chicago in 2008. They dropped two goals in Chicago. They lost 2-0 on aggregate to Chicago. 2009, They were up 2-1 after the first game here in Foxborough, going back to Chicago. Chicago wins 3-2. Now, again, this is a much different team. Guys that were on those teams in the past are not on those teams now, unless you're Charlie Joseph, which that's a different case. Important key guys, important key players like Bobby, Kellen, those guys weren't playing for the Revs back then. Now they are. And regardless, history shows the Revs as a road team don't do well. So I don't feel good about the Revs. If they were a 3 seed, how do you feel about them going down to Kansas City? Rip my heart out. I don't want to see it. It wouldn't be. I think it'd be much worse because you built up all this excitement this year and you built up all of this momentum showing they're going to be a dominant team in the playoffs. They're going to be a team to be feared in the playoffs. And again, you know, at times like Monday, a Saturday night show you that on the road, this team is not reliable. And Montreal played a great game for all things considered. Marco DeVille was, I mean, you heard Jay Heaps say it there with the calls courtesy of Comcast to start the show. And that was, that you got to find the space better. And you got to, close in on defenders better. Now, there are other aspects of this game that we still need to get into. I mean, there's the Andrew Farrell angle, which I haven't even touched on yet. There's the Kevin Alston and why he started Kevin Alston over Darius Barnes angle. There's a lot of layers to this, and a lot of it has to do with rest going into the playoffs, sure. But this is a time where do you really want to mess up the chemistry now this late in the season? Yeah, I understand Andrew Farrell outside of Montreal and Houston has played every minute of every game this year. But really, was that the game where you, on a day where you could clinch with a win or a tie, you clinch? And you go into the playoffs, and you sit one of your best defenders. One of your most reliable defenders, too, at that. Because, I mean, sitting Andrew was like, it first off, blew me away. The injury report did not read, Andrew Farrell, questionable, unlikely to play, out, unavailable. No, I mean that was something leading up to the game time, and it caught us all off guard. I mean, I think we all knew that at some point these guys were going to need rest. Rest was going to come eventually for these guys, but at a certain point, you have to realize when you need to rest guys, and when you need to have guys go to that next level, and bring your team to that next level, as I should say as a whole. Not individually as a guy, because we all know what type of player Andrew Farrell is. He's one of the best, if not one of the top defenders in this league. All right, he's a top 10 defender for sure. I mean, athletically, he's built like a monster. He's got so many quick assets to his game. He's just a good player, and I mean, I think not having him in there the other night versus Montreal was really shown, because DeVille's goals, the first one was a lack of communication between AJ Soares and Kevin Alston in the back line, in which DeVille was able to slip through. It was clinical. I mean, it was amazing to see what that guy did. I mean, you saw him get the ball on his foot, and automatically you're thinking that's going past Bobby, and that wasn't Bobby's fault the other night. Bobby's not the guy I'm going to go after the other night. The guys I'm going to go after, the guys defensively that just did not play well. It was weird. It was definitely a weird game, because we haven't seen this type of game from the Revs at all. Another asset, facet of that game that interested me as well was when you got Jermaine Jones playing back deeper. That was different. Jermaine Jones and Daigo Kobayashi sat back as your two holding midfielders the other night. And that wasn't the worst of lineup decisions Jay's ever made. Because Daigo Kobayashi's Mr. Reliable. He's started 22 games this year. He's played in 32 games this year. He's a good player. He's a reliable player. He's a guy that I think is a utility man, if you will. He is going to be eating up minutes. He is going to be somebody that if you have a lead, he can close out a game for you. And, I mean, he might not be able to give you 90 minutes, but he can give you between 30 to 75 on any given night, for sure. 30 as a sub, on as a, and then anything past 50 minutes he can give you as a starter. But the great thing about what the Revs have is that in the central midfield position is that they're going to have depth in a couple of weeks. Because here we go. In a couple of weeks, you got Andy Dorman coming back. You got, you know, Daigo back there. And don't forget, you got Scott Caldwell, too, who sets up that Lee Wynn goal. And came on for a sub as Daigo Kobayashi later in the match. And Scott Caldwell, once again, proves why he's one of the most important pieces to this puzzle. But in going back to Daigo and Jermaine, that wasn't the best of midfield tandems pairings that we've seen in a game since Jermaine Jones has signed here. I think the midfield battle, the Revs lost the composure of the game. I didn't think they lost the tempo. They lost the momentum. There was no real tempo or momentum built in that game. I mean, Montreal was able to penetrate the Revs' defense. And why? Because they were able to break through the midfield. Jermaine Jones sitting back more allowed Montreal to push up the field more. I mean, you saw Jermaine Jones sitting at the top of the 18. I think I saw a couple of points there. So in that sense, it wasn't pretty. And on top of that, too, you got who, you know, who's Jermaine Jones bitching and moaning with and kicking and fussing with like a little girl? Like, you know, him and Dilly Duke are going at it. And I understand there is grudges and little things that you need to fix on the pitch that you try to iron out when you're out there. But Jermaine, keep your head, man. You know, the great thing about some great Boston sports icons, Brady. I guess I can't even put Ortiz in there. But the point is, in big moments, you want these guys to keep their heads. Saturday was a big moment because Saturday was a clinching moment. I didn't think Jermaine Jones kept his head all that much. Lee Wynn proves why he's one of the best athletes in this area right now. Again, this man shows everybody in the region why he's been the most clutch player, he's been the most consistent player, and the best player. You would have thought of that would have been Jermaine Jones, but it's been Lee Wynn. But Jermaine hasn't even really, you know, to a certain extent, really hasn't even been a close, has been a close second, but it's not like he's the only one that's right up there with Lee. Because he's not. I mean, I think after Saturday night, that showed you that you can win with other guys on you can pull points with other guys on the field. You can even possibly win with other guys on the field that are not named Jermaine Jones. I mean, that's always been the case, but I mean, I just think if Jermaine's out of his game, everybody else has to work a little bit harder, and that's not necessarily a bad thing either because they have workhorses on this team. So those are my thoughts, my opening thoughts from the other night. Let's look at the good, just the good, the bad, and the ugly, though. Let's break it down in those senses. The good, all right? And I said it before to open up. It finally made Saturday night enjoyable. After 12 tries, New England's able to pull a point at home when trailing at, when trailing at halftime. 0-11-1 now when trailing at halftime. Finally, a point comes. So that's the good. Lee Wynn is MLS's most reliable player right now still. Who cares if it was a deflection goal, right? He's still one of the most dangerous players on an MLS team right now. I mean, this team is 10-1-2 when Lee scores. All right? You're going to guarantee yourself points, and you're going to guarantee yourself you're going to be in a good position to win. If Lee's setting up goals here, I mean, New England, undefeated when they score two or more goals. So all you need to do is get Lee one of them, and that's half the job right there, all right? And that's how more than half of your wins are coming through Lee Wynn right now. Mr. Reliability. This is why he's MVP caliber. This is why people have looked at Lee Wynn in a different light this year. It's because of stats like that. And Bobby Shuttleworth is still Bobby Shuttleworth, which is just okay. Didn't really need to get tested, but it wasn't even, I thought Bobby again, you know, in certain areas knows how to make a good save, and I didn't think Bobby was the issue the other night. So I'm putting Bobby in the good because I think there was one save in there too. I forget who it came from, but Bobby was big when he needed him to be. The bad, Marco DeVio stealing points from New England. Again, we said it. Why is that guy been able to slip in behind the defense the way he was the other night? Ugh, that just was not a good sign. There is no plan B without Andrew Farrell. That's clear. I mean, there is nothing that says to me that the Revs have a backup plan if Andrew Ferrell was ever to go down. I didn't get into it just now as much, but I'm going to get into it right here. You know, why does it seem like that the Revs are a more frenetic team when Andrew Ferrell's not out there? When Andrew's in there, you feel more confident because, I mean, he's pushing people to the sidelines, but they're not as comfortable when he's not in there. And it made me think the other night, what are they going to do if he was... That's knocking on wood right there. What was he going to do, or what are the Revs going to do if he ever goes down? I mean, do you know what you do with that position? You're not going to put Alston there. After the other night, I'm not putting Kevin Alston as a starting right back. Coming off the bench, sure. But I'm not starting him there. And again, you know, I'm not trying to kill Kevin Alston here. I said it the other night, but he's not capable of playing that position right now. I just don't think he is. I got nothing against Alston. I think he's had a great comeback in his career. I think he's a very admirable player, and he can be a role model. I'm not trying to kill this guy. The point is, he's not fit for right back. And the Revs, outside of Andrew Ferrell, do not have a backup plan if he's to go down. Their backup plan is Kevin Alston, and that's not a very good plan B. And New England is still not a very... Jermaine Jones didn't play well. Is it best what he's... That's the other thing, too. Jermaine Jones, is it best that he's playing with the team in Florida? I mean, sure, the Revs are still undefeated with Jones at center defensive mid. But how do you feel about this team not... having Jermaine Jones join them in Houston from Florida after Tuesday night? I mean, I don't know if Jermaine's going to... I mean, Ajay's going to be like, just get him 20 minutes, get out. I think it's going to be a good role model thing. We'll talk about U.S. men's national team in a couple of minutes here for these guys to work with a guy like Jermaine. But on the other side of things, don't get hurt. Knock on wood. That's another thing. Don't just, you know, go into that game against Honduras. It's a friendly, you know, it should be anything more than just a friendly. And then the really bad, the ugly, this is the most important thing. New England is still not a very good road team. They're 5-9-1 this year on the road. And historically, since Jay's taken over, they haven't been a good road team. I mean, there's 6 losses on the road in 2013. All right, they had 11 total. 6 came on the road. So I know that it's not a true number of what, you know, you have, but this year should show you more that you're a better team on at home than you are at the road, even though that you have more experience. So there we go there. That's my Revs recap for you. We'll have more stuff on Thursday. Working on a lot of stuff for Thursday. So bear with me there. Follow me on Twitter, at Podcast Invaders. I have a lot of news coming up between Papagayos, between stuff happening at 1510. A lot of good stuff. So make sure you stay in tuned with us. Okay, let's jump to MLS playoffs. First, DC United. Well, let's look at the standings real quick. The Revs clinch. New York clinches. DC clinch. Sporting Kansas City clinch. One more spot to go in both conferences. Columbus has a 6-point lead on Toronto and a 7-point lead on Houston. Barring a epic, it's impossible now for Houston. They're eliminated. We're pretty much going to eliminate Toronto. So Columbus is essentially in. It's a matter of, do they play any higher than 5? So your Eastern Conference playoff should look like, as of today, if the playoffs were to start today, this is what it's going to look like. DC in first with 55 points. New England in second with 49 points. Sporting Kansas City in third with 49 points. New England has the tiebreaker with more wins for second place. New England has 15, Kansas City has 14. New York in fourth place with 47 points. And Columbus in fifth place with 46 points. So there you go there. And, I mean, New York and Columbus play this weekend. If you're New York, I mean, you're playing, all you need is a win or a tie. I mean, you're good there. I mean, or if you're New England, do you hope that Columbus wins? I think if you're New England, you hope Columbus wins. And I'll tell you why. Here's first. If Columbus was to win and New England and Kansas City lost. Let's theoretically, New England and Kansas City lose this weekend, and Columbus wins. Well, you're still in second place, believe it or not. You bump New York down to fifth place, and you're still in second place because you tie. You have more wins. Columbus will have 49 wins, but they'll have 49 points, but they'll have 13 wins on the year. New England will still have 15. Kansas City will still have 14. So you're hoping for all in all, you're hoping for a Columbus win this weekend if you're a Revs fan. Okay. And the Western Conference looks like this. Seattle Sounders in first with 60 points, 19-10-3 on the year. The Galaxy at 60 points as well, 17-6-9. Salt Lake, 52 points. You talk about, you know, what we thought was a done deal in the Western Conference. I mean, we obviously knew that the 1 and 2 was going to come down to the final day between LA and Seattle. But look at the way things have paired out between Salt Lake and Dallas. Salt Lake, 52 points, 14-8-10 on the year in third place. Dallas, 51 points in fourth place, 15-11-6. 1 point separates Salt Lake and Dallas. That's amazing because I would have never have thought that those two teams would have been this close late in the season. And Oscar Pereira, after beating LA the other night, huge 2-1 win at home. How do you not give this man a look at the coach of the year? Yeah, I know what Ben Olsen did, but how do you not give Pereira, manager of the year, for doing what he's done with FC Dallas? This is a young team. I don't know the amount. I can't count off the number of my head how many homegrown players are on this roster, but it's a lot. And he's just got a good system down there right now. I mean, Dallas is going to cause a lot of problems for people. 87th minute winner from Fabian Castillo. And we talked about it when we were doing our MLS's 24-24. Fabian Castillo is the guy that you got to look for. He's a dangerous player. And only 22 years old. The Colombian has really made a huge impact up top this year for Dallas. And it's the first time that this team has been in the playoffs since 2011. So, I mean, you know, teams that have been a little bit away from a while from the playoffs coming in. It's going to be a fun playoffs this year, man. New names coming in and stuff. So, I mean, but Pereira as a coach with Dallas to do what he's done going from club to club in a transition that where he went to the playoffs last year with Colorado, lost early, but goes to the gets another team to the playoffs this year. I mean, that's huge. And, 51 points in the Eastern Conference would give you second place right now with no problem. But because they play in the West in a much better competition, they're sitting in fourth. And then Vancouver sitting in fifth with 46 points at 11-8-13. Huge win against Seattle. The Sounders at home getting shut up by Vancouver. 1-0. Big, big, big win for Carl Robinson's Whitecaps. Portland played midweek, so, you know, they knew their result, and, you know, that's going to be fun to see how that finishes out. Both teams back in action this weekend when you got Portland hosting RSL, and that's not going to be easy. And then you got Vancouver down in San Jose. And that won't be easy as well because we saw how tough San Jose put up a fight with Portland pretty good. And Portland's got 45 points at 11-9-12. And I look at Portland as one of those teams that it's going to be a disappointment if they don't make it this year. There was a lot of money put into that team. There was a lot of hype in that area. You know, going to the playoffs last year was huge. But this will be a disappointment if the Timbers don't make the playoffs. It'll be a huge success for Vancouver and Whitecaps. But, I mean, this will be a huge failure for Caleb Porter. And I don't even think he should be in the consideration for Coach of the Year anymore. I think when it comes down to that battle now, for me, it's Pereira, Ben Olsen, Bruce Arena, and then fourth place Jay Heaps. That's where I sit on the Coach of the Year superlatives. But who cares about my vote? I don't even really vote. I don't get to vote for the league stuff, so nobody gives a damn what I got to say, right? Sure. No, but I think, yeah, I don't think, and many people would disagree that Dallas has been one of the up-and-coming teams. I mean, think about where Dallas was historically. Did you think that with, I think they were, I don't remember off the top of my head. I think last year they sat relatively close to the bottom line in the Western Conference. Yeah, last year, this is a team that went from 8th place in 44 points and only 11 wins last year to, first off, going 7 points plus this year, all right? And you've got already 4 more wins than last year. That's why you put a guy like that in for Coach of the Year. And obviously, you know why you give Ben Olsen that same look as well, worst to first. But if we've learned anything from teams that have gone from worst to first is that they can easily go back from first to worst. So don't sleep on that either. You know, which team, which club seems more stable heading down the long run here? And which coach can do more with their talent? I mean, obviously, it's an award that's focused on this year. So for this year, too, look at how young the talent was for Pereira. I mean, the average age, I think Dallas was only one of the other only younger teams this year. So there's my thoughts on that. Just scrolling down, just trying to find some other real good little nuggets for you guys. Oh, yeah, so Columbus pretty much knocked out Philadelphia this weekend. I mean, it was, give Jim Curtin credit. When he was announced that he was coming back next year, he was 6-2-5 when the extension was announced. So it's not like Greg Vaney up there in Toronto that took the job from Ryan Nelson and has only gone 2-5-1. All right, Curtin keeps his job because Philadelphia went to an MLS Open Cup final. And they were competitive to the playoff race to the end. Vaney won't because, well, he took over a terrible situation when Ryan Nelson left. And they were just awful even under Vaney. So he's not coming back. And Columbus is a real scary dark horse, man. Again, I mean, they've pretty much stepped it up down the stretch here. 13 points in 6 matches. That's all I need to say. Then the other one, Kansas City 2-0 on Chicago. Kansas City shouldn't have lost that game, and they didn't. So there's that. And then finally on the MLS playoff front, you know, we have the away goals matter now. There you go. To my points earlier, don't fall any lower than second if you're the refs, because I mean that's another thing that could sneak up on you and bite you in the end. Imagine, I mean that's just something that you want to avoid as much as possible, falling into an away aggregate situation. I mean the refs play very good at home. They don't let teams score at home either. Rarely do you see teams put up more than 2 goals at home on the refs. So that's another fact of the day. And what should the average fan experiencing their first playoffs expect? You should expect, and I know this is going to sound a little contradictory of myself here, but you should expect a lot of goals. Because with the talent that's coming into this playoffs, these are teams that have a lot of fast-paced teams. A lot of good scoring on all teams. Dwyer for Kansas City. Lee Wynn for New England. Fabian Espíndola for DC United, who's been one of my favorite players this year on that team. Higuain for Columbus. Bradley Wright Phillips for New York. You got the scoring of Obafemi Martins in Seattle. You know, Donovan and Keane connecting in LA. You know, this is going to be a crazy playoffs from the standpoint of there's going to be a lot of goals, and which is why I think the away aggregate too could screw up a lot of things. I mean, you might have been fine doing without it because of how many goals that you're going to have. You might not need away aggregate just to decide things because things will be so stagnant. So I think it wasn't the greatest of moves by MLS to do it, but if we're trying to go down the route of following everybody else, I guess we should do the most annoying rule in all of soccer. Like, that's the thing that amazes me with MLS. You decide to go with the most agitating rule in the sport of football, and that is having away goals count Oh, even in European football, Europeans will tell you that's a terrible rule, and they need to do away with that. But that's what we come to here in MLS. That's what we think makes us more European savvy. God. Promotion relegation, people. That's all I'm going to say. You heard Jurgen Klinsmann say it. You heard him. He's bashed on MLS. Jurgen Klinsmann has absolutely bashed all over MLS. And rightfully so. I don't got a problem with Klinsmann going after MLS the way he has here. It's not a league that I trust it. I like it. It's good the way that it's grown, but it has a lot of flaws. And that's all I think Klinsmann was saying the other day. But you have the national TV games here that are going to help. I mean, you got Seattle and LA, which will finish out the season on national TV. Seattle and LA open up in Seattle on ESPN2, close out the season in LA on NBC. A lot of people can see that game. And that's going to be a lot of fun because they're going to be playing for the supporters' shield at the end. And the games will be very good. They're going to be competitive. And, I mean, it's going to be a showcase of, U.S. talent as well. The spotlight of the games there. Obviously, Donovan. Obviously, Dempsey. Obviously, Keane. Obviously, Obafemi Martins. But the young guns are going to get their exposure as well. It is going to be the stage and the moment for guys like DeAndre Yedlin and Giassi Zardes. And that's why those games are going to be must-see television. Because you want to see those guys go out there and absolutely tear it up. Because American soccer fans and American sports fans in general know the dangerous players for Seattle and LA. They don't know Zardes. They don't know Yedlin. Those are the ones that you want to step up when the bright lights come on. All right, before we go and talk, before we talk U.S. Three, two, one. All right, before we talk U.S. men's national team and stuff, got to get back to our friends at where? Papagayo's. Who? Papagayo. But what is it? It is a Mexican kitchen and tequila bar located in four different spots over the metro Boston area. Check them out in Assembly Row, South Boston, City Square in Charlestown, and then downtown Boston as well. It's Papagayo's Mexican restaurant. There are friends. I'm going to tell you to go to the one in Somerville and Assembly Row. Because, that's where we're going to be. We're going to be hanging out there. We're going to be doing shows from Papagayo's in Somerville. Yes, we have a sponsor. We have our new home. And we got a place to go to do some shows and hang out with you people. As I said, the Revs might not be in Boston, but we are. We're going to go to Papagayo's in 331 Great River Road in Somerville. And we're going to do some shows from there. We're going to have gift cards to give away. We're going to give away some fantastic prizes from the Papagayo restaurant. I mean, the menu is ridiculously good. If you like tequila, this is the place to be. And it'll be the spot during playoff time as well to come down to. Yeah, I know about the Banshee. Yeah, I know about the Phoenix. But you know what? I know a lot of you people live north of the city as well. Come out and hang out with us at Papagayo's. 331 Great River Road in Somerville. You're not going to be disappointed. I mean, we got guacamole on deck. We got Maine lobster guacamole, queso dip. And then, obviously the specials, the favorites, the street tacos. Maybe if you're looking for a little bit of a healthy option. I know everybody likes to go gluten-free nowadays. We got heart-healthy tacos. We got tortas y barbegas, which is like sandwiches. You got sandwiches there. You got your enchiladas. I mean, this is everything. This is everything you want to be here. Check them out online. Don't just take my word for it. PapagayoBoston.com. P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O Boston.com. It's Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar, and you want to check it out today. Tell them Tommy sent you. You're not going to go home unhappy. I guarantee you. And before we close out today's show, as I said, U.S. men's national team talk. My man, Neymar, 4 goals in Japan today while everybody else was sleeping away. We were preparing for the pod, and we watched Neymar absolutely tear it up against Japan. 22 years old. Does life get any better for a kid like Neymar? Let me backtrack for a second. It was miserable what happened this summer to this kid, Neymar. But, I mean, when you think about the overall career this kid has had, he's my age, and he's already a legend. They've already built an idol for him in Brazil. And soon enough, when he brings home more silverware to Catalonia, he will have a statue in Barca as well. I mean, he's such an incredibly gifted player. And he's already done more offensively at his age, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I can guarantee you, Neymar has done more at his age than both Ronaldo and Bale, statistically, and, you know, on the field, too. I mean, you know, Neymar broke out much younger to the Spanish footballing scene than Bale and Ronaldo did. And it doesn't come down to who did it first or who did it quicker, but who did it more effectively. And obviously we know how good Ronaldo's been, but we don't know what Messi, Neymar can bring to La Liga and Barcelona. And by all my considerations, my calculations, as long as Messi stays healthy, as long as Suarez doesn't bite anybody's ear off, literally, Neymar should be one of the best players in the world by the time it's all said and done. Neymar should be right there in the conversation with Messi and Ronaldo, and that's all I got to say about that. But U.S. men's national team stuff, I thought if there's one thing we're looking out for, it's storylines, because I could care less about the games. I could care less. I watched a little bit of – I'll be honest. I didn't watch much of the game the other night. I watched some of it. It wasn't the most enthralling game. Obviously, I watched Landon Donovan, but other than that, USA friendlies, I mean, they don't get you. They shouldn't get you that excited. They don't get me that pumped up. Now you got Honduras here in Jacksonville tonight. Guess who's not getting pumped up for this one? This guy right here. I will say, though, that Jurgen Klinsmann is the best still when it comes to being on a microphone. This man is absolutely a gem when he steps behind a mic. And some people might go down the other route and try not to poke the beast. But I like the fact that there are reporters in this country that are asking Jurgen Klinsmann the tough questions and he's answering. And one of the tough questions that he had to answer was talking about Michael Bradley yesterday. He said that Michael Bradley still needs to prove something. I mean, I don't think anybody expected Jurgen Klinsmann to drop this. I mean, Mike bombshell yesterday. This is what Jurgen said about Michael Bradley. And really says, Jurgen Klinsmann says Michael Bradley has to prove his worth during difficult Toronto FC season. That is the headline on MLSsoccer.com now. Here it is. Making that decision going from Roma, a Champions League team, to Toronto, that now seems like they're not even qualifying for the playoffs, it's a huge disappointment, he said. That's Klinsmann. Quote, that comes along with how you need to adjust yourself to whatever environment you are in. He has to adjust to the environment that he is in with Toronto instead of maybe an environment with that plays Champions League football. He's going through that experience now and is still coming in now, the first time since the World Cup. He has to prove that he hasn't lost a bit. Ooh. Ooh. Ooh, Michael Bradley. This is not good for people that are so pro-USA and so pro-MLS. You know, I wish Will and Brian were here because I know they would battle me on this one. There's a lot of... And I talked with Will about this yesterday for a little bit. Because I saw these comments and I said I had to comment on it with Will. And the thing that really stuck out in our conversation was, well, Jurgen really has dug deep into this German-American pool of talent. Jermaine Jones is on the team, John Anthony Brooks, Timmy Chandler. Fabian Johnson, Julian Green, the list goes on. And there's more of a trust. We came to the consensus that maybe Jurgen just trusts his German-American-born players more than anything right now. Joe Gau, who's going to be out until January with an MRI after revealing that he hurt himself much worse than expected the other night at the friendly. But, you know, Jurgen just does not have any faith in MLS. And I completely agree. How do you go from a Champions League environment like Roma and then to Toronto and not produce? Jermaine Jones plays his entire life in Germany. Comes over here to the U.S., dominates. Why? Because for his entire life, he's seen the best of the best. That's why. And I didn't think it needed to be emphasized that much. I mean, Klinsmann just pretty much has summed up everything that I've been saying all along. get to Europe and start playing the right way. That's why I'm so excited for a kid like DeAndre Yedlin. That's why I'm hoping Yedlin goes overseas. I'm hoping he goes to make that January transfer move to Tottenham. I hope that becomes official. Need to do that. That has to be, I mean, that's just good for U.S. soccer, I feel like. You want a guy that is going to be over there and dominate and play in a club that I think, you know, there's some familiarity with. Love the outspokenness of Jurgen Klinsmann, though. And I think, you know, I think his players are still going to play for him. He's just putting more pressure on the guys. Start pressuring these guys. Make it an absolute priority that it's country over club. And to play for your country, you have to be playing good on all facets. And that includes your club. But at the end of the day, you can't let your club performance affect what you're doing on the country level. And maybe that's what happened to Michael Bradley in the end. Maybe he got too big of an ego. And when he came back to play for the U.S. in the World Cup, he just didn't have it. I don't know. We'll be back on Thursday, hopefully with actual people here. And I'm not just sitting by myself in a studio. We'll see. We have a guest coming on Thursday and also a lot of announcements coming up. So please follow me on Twitter @PodcastInvaders. Follow Will on Twitter @WillyFootball. Follow Brian on Twitter @Brian_Speaks. And we'll go from there. But Revs are in the playoffs. New Englanders are happy in that sense. And now it's time to go and watch the U.S. tonight at 8 o'clock. Hope you enjoyed the pod. We'll be back on Thursday, people. Bye. And I don't bust.